Oh, hey, all of our listeners. It's Rob, and I got you something for Christmas. It's a live recording of a new show I've been working on called Idiomatic, and it's a panel show about words and language. We've done a few episodes of Idiomatic this year, and this is the recording of our second show, pitting Johnny Schwartzbein, Rick Wood, and Lucia Fasano against Becky Sanders, Matt Kirshen, and Will Hines. It's written by me and Frankie Griffin, and we taped it at Jason Van Glass's show, Jason Van Glass and Friend, at the Clubhouse in Los Angeles, California. If you like our normal show, I think you might like this too, because, well, I like both of them. If I'm right, let us know. We also have a video of the show online. Right now that's only for patrons over at patreon.com/notart, which is the home of my physical book subscription service. If your life has been missing monthly mailings of spy-fi comedy, we've got the cure. If what you need is a sci-fi comedy about a guy stuck in space with his robot, well, let's face it, you have a lot of options available to you. And we're so glad you include us in your choices. We can't wait to share our new season with you, we just have to finish carving it. You see, here at Frequency Earth Farms, we start every episode with a big block of white noise, and slowly chip away every part of the waveform that doesn't look like our new season. It's incredibly time-consuming, and much harder than just writing scenes and hiring actors. But we feel it's important to come up with a process, and then never deviate from it, even when much better methods are readily available. Well, see you next year.
This is Idiomatic. This is the show for the etymologist in all of us. Is it entomologist? Either way, it's the show about words that bug us. My name is Rob Schultz. I'll be your host this evening. I do this show because I'm interested in words and where they come from. I was just looking up the word megalomaniac for some reason. It's not an old word. You don't see it in Shakespeare, even though you see megalomaniacs in Shakespeare. So my theory was that this word is only maybe a century old. I thought maybe it was invented. It was coined to describe Hitler. I was wrong. It turns out that the word megalomaniac was invented about 7 years before Hitler was. That's in about the 1850s. That means it was probably invented to describe that bastard Grover Cleveland. He won the popular vote 3 times in a row, and 2 of those they let him be president. Oh, and fun fact, while I was there, I also looked up Hitlerific. Turns out that is a word that's used to describe things that are pretty Hitler-y. Before we get started tonight, I want to let everybody know that we have taken great efforts and strides and pains to make sure that all of the information you hear tonight, starting now, let's say, true and accurate. And if that wasn't possible, funny. Who's ready to start again? Ladies and gentlemen, each round of tonight's game is an impassable, puma-filled crevasse of wordy dangers and dangerous words. It is only by assembling a team of crevasse crossing specialists working in perfect three-part harmony that each team has any chance at all of reaching the other side safely and building bridges, railroads, or hyperloops that can deliver the rest of us to their hard-won victory. Portaging fjords to my right, you know him from his ability to drive pythons into rock with his bare hands, his guest appearances on Seaside Chats with Kenneth Arthur, and of course, his unbroken streak of victories on every episode of Idiomatic ever played. It's Johnny Schwartzbein. Joining Johnny tonight, he is a master of disguise and an artist with a false mustache. He is known for his guest appearances on the Sad Dad podcast and his terrific album, In the Evening of an Empire. It's musician Rick Wood. Also on Johnny's team, the Don Cheadle to his Terrence Howard. She's never seen a lock she couldn't pick with a loaded 38. You know her from her guest appearances on the Student Council podcast and her eerily thorough and well-annotated Wikipedia article. It's cartoonist Lucia Fasano. And on the left, composed of 5 different jungle animals, you know her from her guest appearances on the Turtlecom podcast and is the proprietor of the new old-time radio show Moonlight Melodies. It's Becky Sanders. Joining Becky this evening, a master of forgotten, unloved, and just plain misunderstood ancient languages. You know him from his guest appearances on the Tea with Alice podcast and his own podcast, Probably Science, which, by the way, is the first result in the iTunes store when you search for Rick Wood. It's television writer Matt Gershon. And finally, a safecracker and puzzle solver extraordinaire. 11th place finisher in the non-competitive adventure game Hadean Lands. You know him from producing so many podcasts that he's buried any weird old shows he's ever appeared on. And once saving someone from drowning. It's our author of Note, Will Hine! Our first round tonight is called Meetings and Failures in Meetings. Which is also the name a Portuguese film executive thought was the best possible name for the Sofia Coppola film Lost in Translation. I will read the name of a popular movie as it is known elsewhere in the world, and points will go to the team that can tell me the original title. To anyone on Johnny's team, what movie is known in Denmark as The Boy Who Drowned in Chocolate Sauce?
Yes. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
That's correct.
Fudge.
Thank you.
That movie is known in Canada as Captain Supermarket.
Captain Supermarket, did you say?
I did.
No idea. Supersize Me? No. Could it also be Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory?
Cheaper by the dozen, right? Because he's like,
I mean, I don't mind sinking on that ship because I think that's funny.
Cheaper by the dozen.
Mark it down. Sorry,
but
that's wrong.
But it was fun.
Thank you so much.
I think it could be like Mr. Mom. Did you do any grocery shopping in that?
Oh, we did that.
Like Mr. Mom, the Captain, Captain Supermarket. Oh.
Taxi Driver.
We were looking for Army of Darkness.
Definitely close.
Modified arm.
What movie is known in Poland as Electronic Murderer?
My first instinct is the Virtuosity, but that's the worst thing.
Lawnmower Man.
That's pretty good, but it's
all Jeff Fahey on you.
We think Terminator.
Ah, that's correct.
Seems so obvious when you get it right.
China as Interplanetary Unusual Attacking Team.
Oh, that's a good knife.
Yeah, I like that.
That's a solid guess. Should we just do it?
Yeah. Go for it.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Correct!
Yeah.
It's very difficult to not say Taxi Driver. It's worth it.
I said Taxi Driver, too.
Known in China as Unusual Interplanetary.
We're going to stick with China for a little bit. What movie is known in China as Ace Big Liar?
You got liar. I guess.
Liar.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's the same to me.
What movie is known in China as Ace God?
Bruce Almighty.
Just to be clear, people in China think Jim Carrey is called Ace.
The marketing strategy, they're standing by. However,
and in the first of the films, he is playing a Ventura.
Anyone knows. Now, what movie is known in China as Ace Announcer?
How many movies is this guy in? Who is it now?
Well, let's see. The Majestic, right? That's all I got. Is it an announcer? In the TV? The one where he's in
the TV?
Truman Show?
Truman Show? Truman Show?
No.
Mm.
Oh, shit.
Got it. And here I am, I just gave him the Majestic.
Mass. So that's incorrect. We were looking for Anchorman.
Just a guy like Jim Carrey.
Confident, bumbling white guy. Gets his ace, and then whatever they're off to.
So all white sketch performers look the same to them.
Yeah, ancient Chinese word for jackass.
Yeah.
I wonder if anybody on your team might know what movie is known in France as the young people who traverse dimensions while wearing sunglasses. The audience knows.
Clockstopper? I mean, it could be Jumper.
They're all the same.
Matrix.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, French don't even know what a dimension is. Got all that cheese and know nothing about the multiverse.
Back to China. What movie is known in China as "He's a Ghost"?
I'm asking.
All ghosts.
Sixth Sense. They just give it away.
Exclamation mark on it.
Oh, there is.
That's right. So the post is just like,
I tried to.
You can at least put a question mark on it.
Or an ellipses.
Yeah.
Like there's something else.
I guess the guy titled it right after he watched it the first
time. A lot of movies to watch, not much time.
I saw Rosebud's a sleigh in Beijing.
He's all right.
You're probably already familiar then with Hong Kong's imaginary dead baseball players live in my cornfield.
Taxi driver? Or
Space Boy has me and Dad.
Space Boy has me.
Johnny, I got it just before you with the correct answer. So sorry, but you're going to get the point.
All right.
Next time.
This movie is known in China as Excitement 1995.
You had more to add to that?
Also known in Finland as Rita Hayworth, Key to Escape.
Oh, Shawshank Redemption.
Correct.
Excitement 95. I get that one. Out of all the ones you said, I get that one.
That's close.
All right. Last one for this round. What movie is known in Germany as I Think an Elk is Smooching Me? It's not my fault.
Thinking of all the movies with the... I've narrowed it down to like six.
Obviously, it's going to be one of the six films where an elf smooches someone, so...
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation? No, that's it.
What's that time?
Welcome to Mooseport.
Elk, not
elk. Oh, elk, sorry. I mixed up.
No.
I'll give you a hint. Your reasonable answers are useless here.
What country is this?
Germany.
Oh, it's Germany. Does anyone have a favorite movie?
Grete and Schultz, they do stuff with poo.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
Can we steal it?
Close as anything. We were looking for Stripes.
Yeah.
You okay?
Because an elk has stripes, and then...
How did stripes get lost in translation to Germany? What's going on over there? You don't have a word for that?
I
the thing is, it's only stripes is just a single word, so there's no German word that combines.
Well, the whole fucking flag is just stripes. It's not like they call their flag a fucking elk hanging out with a
the address of the embassy. Yeah. You can write a letter.
That movie ends with them invading East Germany, so maybe they just wanted no one to go see it.
But you would go see a movie that was called that. I wouldn't go see a movie called Stripes.
Provide you with the address for the film studio.
Look, I'm not going to get all bent out of shape about Germany when they do something really bad. I'll send them a strongly worded letter. Death is everywhere. Death is everywhere.
It's still about them putting pressure on the Greek economy.
Oh, reindeer games. Now it's time for the round you've all been waiting for. If you didn't like the first one, round two. In our idiomatic round, I'm going to be asking the panelists about common, everyday phrases and expressions. It is their job to tell me something about the origin of that phrase, how it came to be, or why we say it today. Johnny, what are flotsam and jetsam?
Those are the two eels in The Little Mermaid. I'm not wrong.
Sure. Yeah. And why are they called that?
Because they sound similar.
Mm. And why do they sound similar?
Because they have similar letters in them.
And why do they have similar letters in them?
I don't know that.
Okay, anyone?
What are flotsam and jetsam?
Some is their last name.
I know, yeah, they're the two types of things that wash up on shore, right?
Yes.
And...
That's fun. Maybe... Yeah.
Well, it's the Swedish word, so they are the son of flot.
What are the two types of things that would come from a boat? Is it like sort of like whether it's part of the boat or cargo on the boat, maybe something like that?
Hang on, is jetson stuff that's been jettisoned over the side of
I think it's just crashed on IKEA.
And flotsam is stuff that just floats off a ship?
That's close enough, Dan. I'm going to give you the point. Under nautical law, which is like the ape law of the seas, flotsam is cargo found floating around after shipwreck. Jetsam is cargo intentionally thrown overboard, sometimes in the event to prevent a shipwreck. But if the effort fails and the ship sinks anyway, it becomes flotsam. This means, and also, if you're at sea and you find flotsam, you're allowed to keep it. But if you find jetsam, you are obligated to return it to its original owner or sink them.
So it's not like finders keepers, it's finders sinkers?
If everyone's dead, you can keep their stuff.
Tight. That's just science.
Does anybody have any idea what the other two kinds of shipwreck cargo are called?
Ooh. Nobody.
Treasure and bullshit.
I'm going to guess boxum and clothesum.
Boxum is the lady in the front of the
No. Derelict is cargo that is sunk and not recoverable, and Lagan is cargo that sank but someone's coming back for it.
Ooh, very fun.
Yeah. We all have our Lagan that we're just going to go back for.
One day. Will, what does it mean if you're winning something hands down?
I'm going to assume that it's like a casino thing where you don't even have to check your cards. All right, Johnny's already mad at me.
I think that's excellent. I think it's very believable. It's not correct.
Okay.
Does anyone else have any ideas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cocky jockey, let's go with the reins.
Yes! The jockey is far enough ahead to feel confident that he's going to win. He might let go of the reins, drop his hands.
Our horse expert.
Or
someone who's used to wearing reins.
I think I got here tonight.
Riding a bird scooter, just like...
Yes.
Like a skateboard.
Oh, this neck injury? I got it hands down.
Becky, what is not rocket science?
what is not rocket science.
Yeah, that's why we say that.
Because rocket science is complicated and hard. And if it's not, then it's easy.
But one particular activity is what inspired the line. That it was not rocket science and it's not brain surgery.
Improv comedy.
New choice.
In the 80s, rocket science unseated brain surgery as the thing that you say that that easy tasks are not. But according to a Pennsylvania newspaper called the Daily Intelligencer, coaching football is not rocket science and it's not brain surgery. Little did they know back then, it kind of is. Why do people in the theater refer to Macbeth as the Scottish play? You know, people in a theater, like we are. Right here.
Is that what you guys are calling it? Don't lie to me. I guess it's just can't understand.
You say it because it's bad luck to say Macbeth.
It's true. This is bad luck.
So that's why you call it the Scottish play.
So to say Macbeth
in a theater.
Yeah.
Like we're doing a lot right now.
I'll say it right here with all these fragile lights. Look,
yeah. It's the same way it's unlucky to say Big Mac in McDonald's.
That's why the first menu to have numbers.
I like the sound.
For that reason.
The number one, please.
A lot of dead people.
Coming up.
That's right.
I mean, it's good because he's the horse expert, which means he's also the Big Mac expert.
Right. I'd like to give you a point because you answered my question, which was not written artfully enough. Because it is considered to be bad luck. It's why we thought that
this round was so tough. You said it in this theater.
Yeah.
And then everything went
haywire. Everything went haywire.
Fun fact, in China they call it Ace Witches.
we will continue the Scottish play triptych in episode 3. Matt, where do we get salty language?
Salty language. I have a guess. Do you want to know, or do you want to?
I have a better guess than Will. Can I?
It sounds nautical. Sounds like a just trying to read your face while I say various things. Sounds like. Is that where you might be going from a sort of nautical thing? That's sort of the language that a sailor might come up with. You know, when he's been out to sea for a while and has a mouthful of seawater, kind of hitting the waves at speed, and you know, you're like, shucks is not what you'd say if you were many hundreds, nay, thousands of miles from.
It'll sound more right the bigger a picture you paint.
Any size, it'll sound correct because it is. Sailors spending their time at sea, as you know, people swear like sailors, and if you're at sea for a long time, you become salty, both in the sense of being experienced and in the sense of the ocean is a terrible place full of salt. Here on Idiomatic, we are pretty excited about words, not least among them the written word. That's why we figure if any show in Los Angeles is going to encourage literacy, it's us. And so, tonight's show is brought to you by How to Be the Greatest Improviser on Earth by our author, Will Hyde. Ask your local bookseller for it by name, and if you don't know their name, just say sir or ma'am. And if that doesn't work, use the ISBN 0982625723. Will, would you like to tell us about your great book?
It's about long-form improv. It's a bunch of advice that I had on a blog for a long time, and I took the most popular ones and edited them and compiled them into a book. It's a hodgepodge of advice about doing improv. Yeah.
Great.
Okay, and the title is Overpromising.
That's correct, 1 point.
Johnny, I know that you were upset last time that you didn't have an author on your team, so you have one tonight. Lucia, tell us about your great book.
Hi. I have this anthology called Where We Live. It's a benefit for the survivors of the Las Vegas shooting for Route 91. So it is an anthology that includes like Neil Gaiman, Kelly Sue DeConnick, Mike Mignola, and me, talking about gun violence and gun culture in America. 100% of the proceeds go to the survivors of that shooting, and it's lots of fun.
ISBN 1534308229, in case anyone's wondering. For what it's worth, you could also pick up one of my zines on your way out tonight. For the latest chapter in a hilarious spy comedy that subscribers have said they're planning to read for sure when they get around to it. It's only about 1/55th as good as either of these other two books by volume, but it is free. Moving on. Film finale aficionados are fashionably familiar with footage featuring frankly infinitesimal fonts filling theater fronts with figures and filings, and find further filmography facts faithfully formatted as follows. No animals were harmed in the making of this film. If you make a movie, you can't just put that phrase at the end in your credits, because it's a trademark of the American Humane Association. The only way to get clearance to use that phrase is to have someone from that association on your set. This all started because of a Western featuring a stunt where a guy rode a horse off a cliff. The stunt was so extreme that the guy lost his hat and the horse died.
His hands were down.
So if you make a film like that today, the AHA only allows you to use the very carefully worded, the American Humane Association monitored the animal action in this film. And again, you can't use that exact phrase unless they permit it. But if you just add the word hot before the words animal action, everything changes. You know, I'm getting off topic. In our next round is called Objects May Be Sadder Than They Appear, and we'd like to hear about what are some other disclaimers that might be worse than not saying anything at all. Anyone has something to ring in?
A lot of signs are sadder if you just add like a past tense, like the word like was or were. Mm-hmm. Like for example, baby was on board.
This product is suitable for and manufactured by children.
Employees must wash hams before returning to
work. Right? They make a sign of that.
Do not take this medication if you intend to operate a vehicle ever.
Cautious point.
I guess I'm fudging it, but it's whenever the last person you inspected in the elevator, like, either has a dumb name or signed their name so messily I can't read it. Scares me.
I'm going to combine that with Matt's last one for one full
slow children used to cross here.
I'm going to give you the same point I gave you before.
Trying to stretch it out.
This movie contains that cool scene where the horse died.
Finally tonight, we commemorate the 54th anniversary of the closing of LA's own Derby Records, a record company known for their wall-to-wall saxophone boogie 45s. You can listen to them today on archive.org or in record shops if they specialize in terrible records. And the way we choose to remember them is with our brand new round, Talk Derby to Me. All of the answers in this round are the names of actual record labels. I'll read a clue. Points will go to the first person to ring in with the correct answer. It's weird how this Chicago R&B label never tried to sign Joy Bishop, Suge Knight, or Queen.
Royal Records.
Sorry, no.
Might as well.
We're looking for chess records.
These are all chess pieces.
Yeah, that's why.
bit in rehearsal.
Gold mining.
Correct. Push your records out of a high window.
Somebody catch my record!
This label, home to Slater Kenny and Sonic Youth, is named for somebody who really loves Matt.
My mom.
We're looking for Matador Records. And finally tonight, if Jim Carrey were a singer and this label released his albums in China, they would probably call this. Thank you so much. Good night.